Call the meeting to order. This is the Senate Transportation. Members present are Senator Olson, Senator Cowdery, Senator Wagoner. 135.
The fourth, huh?
This is the fourth, this is the fifth. I don't know, but it...
Fourth.
Fourth of March. First bill before us today is Bill 358, titled Railroad Track Construction. Are you going to present this, Mr. Senator, or is it one of your staff?
I can explain it, and maybe we have Wendy here.
Yeah.
But anyway, it just kind of deals with a problem by amending the procurement code so that the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities can work directly with the Alaska Railroad on track work through a reimbursable service agreement similar to other utilities like power and water lines. Prior to '96, the Alaska Railroad could conduct track work for DOT projects under utility agreements. But after 1996, procurement code was amended requiring DOT to contract for track work under the competitive bid process. For a time, contractors bid and won such work. However, recently, contractors have shown less interest in bidding work, especially the smaller projects that we're mainly talking about. And they don't have the specialized expensive equipment to conduct the work. And they experience high costs trying to meet the specifications required. To remedy this situation and ensure DOT provides projects move forward, Senate Bill 358 will allow the DOT the flexibility to use either the competitive bid process or to work directly with the Alaska Railroad. The advantage of this arrangement for DOT is possible lower costs and savings of time. The advantage for the railroad will be the enhanced quality and assurance that the industry standards are met. They've been working with this through ATC. ATC is on board with this bill, and I think it should be passed. It's something that's got to be done. It's a problem that we can solve it easier here. So anyway, that's my presentation.
Wendy, would you like to come up and present? You also.
Okay.
Both of you, please introduce yourselves and who you work for and put it on the record. And Wendy, you can lead off.
Thank you. My name is Wendy Linscoog. I'm the Director of External Affairs for the Alaska Railroad. And I would like to add that online, we have Eileen Riley, who is our Vice President of Projects, and also Tom Brooks, who's our Chief General Engineer. So if there are questions that are beyond me, I may kick something up to them.
You also let the record reflect that Senator Lincoln's joined us.
My name is Mark O'Brien. I'm the Chief Contracts Officer for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities.
And I'll just ask DOT, are you aboard on this?
Yes, we've been working with the railroad and the Associated General Contractors on this issue for, I guess, sort of about a month ago or so. And we've had a number of meetings with them and discussions over this issue, and we are in support of this bill. We've had a number of occasions where, since the provision was passed that prohibited us from entering into reimbursable services agreements with the railroad, we've had a number of occasions where we've had contractors that have not been able to successfully complete their work on our projects, and the railroad has had to come in and complete some of those projects for us. The problem is that a number of these firms have gone out of business, and primarily there is one firm that has been coming from the lower 48 to do this railroad work when we bid it out. And if you can imagine, there's some serious equipment involved in this work, and mobilizing that equipment up, especially on the smaller jobs, just isn't cost effective for them. So we have a situation where the railroad has this equipment up here and the workforce available to do these, especially the smaller projects. It really makes sense for us to be able to enter into an agreement with them, similarly to the way we enter into agreements with utilities, and have them do the work for us. As mentioned in your introduction, Senator Cowdery, there are larger projects where we may well bid this out. There are projects that will exceed the capacity of the railroad. Example would have been the Whittier Tunnel project. They probably would not have taken that on as a reimbursable. It would have tied up all of their resources, manpower, and gear on that project for a couple of years. And then it will be worthwhile to mobilize contractors in to do that work. But there will be a number of occasions, and we have a couple coming up in the future here, that entering into an agreement with the railroad will really work out to the benefit of both the department and the railroad.
Senator Cowdery?
Can you describe some of the smaller projects in general terms, what they would be?
Through the chair, Senator Cowdery, yes. Anytime we're into an intersection area or an improvement in a street improvements project where there are railroad tracks on or nearby, for that small type work, there's just it's not cost effective to think about bringing a contractor in for that. I can't give you specific projects, but I can tell you that those rehabilitation type projects that involve a railroad crossing are fairly numerous.
Senator Cowdery,
just one follow-up, please. But if an overpass was for the railroad to overpass a highway, I suppose that would be put out to bid. Is that right?
Through the chair, Senator Cowdery, the way it would work is that this bill would only affect track, and when we're talking about track, really we're talking about the track, the ties, and ballast. So up through subgrade and all of the work associated with getting that crossing in place would still be under contract and would be done by a prime contractor for us. They would quit at the point where the railroad would take over and do tracks, ties, and ballast.
I was mainly thinking like up in Willow, the overpass of the railroad over the Parks Highway. Would that be come under this, or would that be a bigger dollar cost project that would be competitive bid?
Through the chair, Senator Cowdery, that would likely be competitively bid. The only part of it that we might enter into an agreement with the railroad on is just the track alignment and the track construction portion of it. The remaining superstructure and sub-base for all of that work would be part of our competitively bid project.
Further questions? Senator Lincoln?
When I looked at this picture, I think that the pictures were put together for my benefit because I appreciate that there's a woman worker there. But it sounds fine to me. I just, when you said, the sponsor asked if you've been working the railroad and AGC. So AGC is on board with this as well, is that correct? And maybe there's a letter in here, I don't know. But in looking at the bill, it says construction of rails, ties, or ballast for the tracks, and that the DOT may, it doesn't say shall, but may enter into an agreement with Alaska Railroad. Then it says railroad may perform, and doesn't say shall, perform the work itself without procuring a contractor. I have no problem with any of that. But when it says may perform the work without procuring a contractor to provide supplies, services, professional services, so it goes really includes construction of rails, ties. I was just thinking of, this big equipment to come in and do all of that. But I would hope that supplies, whatever Alaska businesses there are for supplies, services, and construction services, whatever we've got in Alaska, that we utilize Alaska businesses and Alaska labor.
Through the chair, Senator Lincoln, I believe what this is really referring to is the fact that often we have stockpiles of the equipment and supplies and that kind of thing that we need at the railroad that has already gone out for under the procurement process, because we are under that code. And so if we end up doing a project for DOT where we've got a stockpile of materials already there, I think that's what that is really referring to. And I would ask Eileen Riley online, if that's appropriate, Mr. Chair, if she could verify that that is correct.
Are you on online?
Yes, I am. This is Eileen Riley, Chairman Country. Wendy does the appropriate statement. We would have materials. We do procure the procurement rules of the state of Alaska. They're virtually identical as the Alaska River. And so we can have those, if we have those materials available, we could use them without delaying the project.
Okay. Any further questions? Senator Olson.
Chairman, thank you. I was wondering if there was anybody else, realizing that some of these projects were actually let out to some subcontractors that are in the private sector and not associated directly with the railroad corporation. Do we have anybody here from the private sector that, besides AGC, that would, actually has an opinion on this bill?
I don't believe there is, Mr. O'Brien. My understanding is the reason we're doing this is those people you're talking about actually aren't even in the state of Alaska. They're from outside the state and come to the state of Alaska to do this type of construction project and are no longer available to do that. Is that not?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. The last contractors we've had on these projects, subcontractors for the rail portion, were out-of-state contractors. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. Further questions? Pleasure to the committee.
I'd like to make a motion.
Senator Cowdery.
Make a motion to move Senate Bill 358 to the next committee of referral with the recommendation and with the. Is there a fiscal note for this? There's none.
No fiscal note. No.
As for unanimous consent.
Is there any objection? We see none. The bill will move. We'll have a short recess here. Senator Terrio has joined us. Full committee now. Next bill before the committee is Senate Bill 298. This is the second hearing on this bill. And plan to pass this bill on to the next committee today. There are several people online to testify. And Senator Cowder.
Well, I'd like to set you up. Maybe so you can ask questions.
Senator, would you like to present the bill from there or up here at the table, or have your staff present it? It's your choice.
I'm comfortable here. Thanks, Senators. I appreciate it. If I can just, if I'm allowed to, I'm Senator Ralph Seekins.
It's your choice, Senator.
And I do appreciate the courtesy, and I would extend the same in my committee at any time. One of the things, I think you have in front of you a map that we tried to make available for you to take a look and see what the impact is. If you go up there north of Fairbanks and north and west of Fairbanks, you'll see where the Dalton Highway crosses the Yukon River, kind of between Stevens Village and Rampart, on those two little dots right there. Senator Lincoln, of course, being from Rampart, one of the 21 residents of that fine city, I understand.
A bigger dot.
If you go up from there, you'll see as it travels north, comes to Coolfoot, Wise Man, then goes through the pass up into the North Slope, and a Anaktuvuk Pass over to the left there, about 75 or more miles to the left, and then into Dead Horse. So if we take a look at the communities that are all within 100 miles or so of each side of the road, we see, of course, Alatna, Alkakit, Arctic Village, Beaver, Bettles, Coalfoot, Evansville, Hughes, Rampart, which is on the south side of the river, Tanana, Venati, Wise Man, Anaktuvuk Pass. Those are some smaller areas that are on each side of that road, most of which would never be accessed by opening this access up to recreational use. But a couple of communities would, I suppose. Around Coalfoot and Wise Man, you'd have some folks that would want to go up there occasionally. Now the road is paved almost all the way to the bridge, I believe. The last I heard, I haven't been up there since it was. I normally stop about 50 miles out the road and then head up into the area towards Birch Creek from just south of Livengood myself. But anyhow, what we're looking at is we're saying this road has been open ever since the Hickel Committee, the Hickel administration. And we're saying that the access that we have now is not conductive to use by the people of the state of Alaska for any purpose whatsoever except to drive down the road. There are instances of people who go up there to hunt on foot in the bow hunting area, which is restricted area for bow hunting on both sides. I'm not suggesting that be changed. And if they park their vehicle too far off the road, the trucks that drive by, they're being cited by officials for using vehicles out of the direct right-of-way into that five-mile corridor. And it has been brought to a head, as I mentioned to you earlier, by enforcement and harassment by people not from the state of Alaska, but more closely from the Bureau of Land Management. The trappers are, as I told you last time, are being threatened. If they don't want to go out there by dog sled or by foot, then they're going to have their 250-275-mile trap lines shut down. I don't think that's right. So I've looked at, and I continue to look at, what possible impacts there would be. The BLM has rules on how people could access their lands. Those rules prevent unnecessary harm to the environment. There's nothing in this that we're considering that would alter that. We just think that access is important, especially when there are a number of RS-2477 accesses along that road, which, because of our own state law, are not accessible for people of the state of Alaska. And that's just not right. So we're bringing this specifically. And the most immediate harm is being done to those who have long-standing trap lines up there. That's all I have to add this afternoon, Mr. Chairman.
And Senator Cowdery, you're asking 5 miles on each side?
What it is, right now there's a corridor, Senator Cowdery, through the chair, that is, you can't operate any kind of a motorized vehicle in. If you start on one side, you can drive across with your snow machine to the other side. But you can't start in the middle and go either way. And, at one time that whole road was shut to private traffic. And it was eventually opened during the Hickel administration. But the restriction for going off that road for any purpose was kept in place unless you were a miner going to your mine, or unless you were in the oil industry. We think it's time to consider access for the average Alaskan. Hunters go out there, but they fly out. They'll fly out. I mean, folks that have an airplane can fly out, but can hunt. Folks that don't have an airplane are just restricted from any use of that land for any purpose unless they want to walk. Not suggesting we change the bow hunting corridor, which corresponds with that on either side of the pipeline. We're just saying access is important. Did have some comments when I checked with some of the people in the area. They were talking, last time we were talking about the central Arctic caribou herd, and that caribou herd is at the highest number in the history since they've been going up there. It's five or six times the size, from what my information I got, of what it was when we first built the road. So the road and bow hunters and other hunters have not been had a leading effect on that herd. The herd that tends to come through the Anaktuvik area is the Western Arctic caribou herd, which at the present time has over 400,000 animals in it. The bag limit is five a day, and the season is 365 days a year. So there's no real problem being posed by people who would want to go 75 miles with a snow machine or an all-terrain vehicle from the highway over to the Anaktuvik area to begin to harvest from the Western Arctic caribou herd.
Questions of the herd of these animals, what percentage of the take is for subsistence? Do you have any numbers on that?
I don't know for sure, Senator. I do know that if the villages that I ticked off before have a total of 1,350 people in them. And that's how far on either side of the road. I mean, Tanana is quite a ways from the Hall Road, and we could never be really accessed from the Hall Road. And it's not in a situation where recreational people are going to go out there. It takes me a day from the river to get to Tanana on my jet boat.
If you're going the wrong way up the river.
Going down river to get there and back up to get home, hopefully before dark. But... and that boat cruises about 35 miles an hour.
Further questions of the bill sponsor?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You're familiar with Alaska Statute 19-40210?
Off the top of my head, Senator. I'm sure you can tell me what it is.
Well, I'm not sure. Well, first of all, let's go back to... obviously, the road was built in the 70s for the enhancement of the pipeline, and there was a restriction put in place. You know what the reason for the restriction was?
I think, as I understood it at the time, it was construction traffic. That road was built to a different standard. That road was highly traversed with trucks and construction machinery. And eventually, as people reconsidered that restriction as time went by, they said that it was, that they removed the restriction.
And who all initially were involved with the, for restricting the highways?
Well, I can't tell you with authority. I can only tell you what I remember. And I do remember that oil companies didn't want people going up north, didn't want additional traffic on the highway. Teamsters didn't want additional traffic for their trucks. There were a lot of dire predictions, none of which have proven true. Quite frankly, a lot of people now go up there, including tourist buses that drive all the way to Prudhoe Bay. And the dire predictions of people starving to death and freezing to death on the road just never happened.
And was there any input by the native community?
I can only tell you what it was inferred to me at the time, Mr. Chairman. I don't know that from personal history. It was inferred to me that some of the folks, for an example, did not want to have other folks out there intruding in the area that they enjoyed exclusive access to. Now, I don't know if that's true or not. That's only by inference, and I have no knowledge, personal knowledge, as to whether that was true or not.
And I know, as Mr. Chairman, talking about the Native community, I was talking about the Native community within the state of Alaska. There are obviously also non-Native people that are up on the North Slope that have a voice and want to know what, or want to have an input on whether the road is going to be open. Remember anything about that?
No, not from personal knowledge. I'm sure that Senator Olson, through the chair, either you or Senator Lincoln would probably have a better recollection of that than I would.
You made a comment just a minute ago about some of the dire predictions that obviously haven't come true. You referenced people freezing to death. You were. And I guess I would, I wouldn't say beg to differ, but I would say that one of the predictions that happened was that there's a problem with the security of the pipeline. And obviously, prior to the Hiskickel administration, there was no problem with the pipeline. After the Hiskickel administration opened up the road, certainly had a major oil spill up there where somebody with a mere 30-06 hunting rifle went in there and poked a hole in it, and oil went all over the place.
To the best of my recollection, sir, that was south of the river.
Could have been south of the river, but that was a relatively easy place to go and clean up north of the river. It's going to be very difficult to clean up. My reading the environment is true. Is that not true?
Senator Olson, I think it would be more difficult to clean up the farther you are away from a major population center. I'd give you that by common sense. However, if I could.
Just want to make sure that this
that road is always there.
This is not an adversarial setup. I'm just asking the question.
I would give you that. It would be harder to clean up the farther you are away. However, I would just say that people drive up and down that road all the time, and they have guns in their cars. They could shoot it out of their truck just as easily as they could out of their snow machine. So not to argue with you, for the record, I really like Senator Olson. I highly respect the man, and
I didn't think there was anything getting out of hand.
By some of the passions that we're feeling here, because obviously hunters have got a fair amount of passion when you're dealing with guns. And
I'll put on the record that I consider Senator Olson to be a good friend and a gentleman. However, I speak that way quite often with my brothers and sisters and my wife.
As his vision was dimming a year ago or so up in the Senate Finance Committee, I do remember that stuff coming out as well. Be that as it may. Have you had input from people from Homeland Security that have voiced their opinion on this particular?
None whatsoever.
None, really? No. The other thing is that this bill would go ahead and do with the statute that I cited earlier, 19-40-210, and in fact, it would do away with it in its entirety. And
that's the one we're attacking. Is that correct?
Yes.
I don't want to interrupt. That is 19-40-210 is the one we're saying would be repealed in its entirety. I have to. Is that correct?
Yes, that's true.
That's all.
And what was the reason that the statute was put in place? Do you remember?
No, I wasn't here then. But I think it was basically, that it was all new area up there, Senator. And I think there were a lot of fears, a lot of things. So the easiest way to approach it was just to shut it off for now. I could be wrong.
Just to give you a little history, there was certainly early on an agreement or an understanding between the Native community and the non-Native community up on the North Slope that the Hall Road would not be open to the public when it was initially contemplated right after the passage of the Land Claims Settlement Act. The people that were involved back then have either gotten older, as we all have, or are actually gone now. One of the insurances they had was that the migration of the caribou herd, that's obviously of paramount importance to the people of so all the way from Point Hope over to Kaktovik, are very concerned about any kind of interference with the caribou. And so because of that, at least my input from people from that area that I do represent are adamantly opposed to opening up this right-of-way.
Senator Lincoln, did you have a question?
Mr. Chairman, I have a number of questions of the sponsor, but I know you've got a whole list of folks, and I'd like to hold off and listen to those folks, and then ask the sponsor some questions.
All right.
Grill me.
We will go ahead then and proceed with public testimony, and we're going to start in Merrill, and if I can't pronounce your name, I'll have my Athabascan colleague here try, and if she can't pronounce it, then we'll just use your first name. So first is Tara Sweeney from Merrill.
Are you testing this moment on the next, please?
Paul Carr.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Paul Carr. I'm the chief of police for the Marshall Borough. I wanted to express a couple concerns about the repeal of a 1942-10 in about three different areas. The first is security. The repeal of AS 1942-10 will increase accessibility and activity around the Trans-Alaska Pipeline at a time when access to critical infrastructure in this country is being tightened and closely scrutinized. It's contrary to the efforts taking place across the nation to secure critical infrastructure as a deterrent to potential acts of terrorism. At present, access is limited, funding is limited, and people who do not belong to the area are very obvious to security controls. I'm concerned that increased accessibility will impact our ability as a state and Alaska's ability as the operator to protect this asset. My second concern is the potential impact that increased access will have on public safety and emergency services. At present, individuals trekking into the pipeline's highway corridor do so on foot. As a result, they remain fairly close to the roadway. The further from a road a person ventures, the greater the difficulty in responding to an emergency situation they may find themselves in. At present, short responding by helicopter, which is extremely expensive, we do not have the equipment to respond to an incident more than a mile distance off the highway. Admittedly, such incidents have been rare, but increased activity will increase our exposure to these kinds of situations. Finally, Alaska statutes and the Alaska Administrative Code do not contain a class or description for a class of vehicle known as off-road vehicles. While it's clear what AS 1942-10 is restricting, it's not clear what type of vehicles would be allowed if it's repealed. The definition of what constitutes an off-road vehicle is needed. If the intent to grant off-road capable four-wheel drive vehicles, trucks, automobiles, access, or just ATV snow machines and four-wheelers. The lack of a clear definition leaves the title of acceptable vehicle open for interpretation. Those are my concerns. I appreciate the opportunity to express it, and I'm available for any questions.
Paul, first of all, do you have written testimony? Did you read your testimony?
Yes, I did.
Well, those of you who are testifying, if you have written testimony, would you forward it to the office here?
Yes, we can.
Appreciate that. Are there questions of Mr. Carr? Senator Lincoln.
Thank you, Paul, for your testimony. And if you could, as being the chief of police of the borough, how far down do you come in your... on that the pipeline road, how far do you monitor?
Through the chair, Senator, the North Central one, the whole area that's inside the borough, which is all the way down to the borough boundary, which is just at Agate Pass, I believe.
So you'd come, would you? Okay, and in that area, how often are you able to stop folks who are speeding or dumping garbage or taking guns off the road or using vehicles that they shouldn't?
Through the chair, Senator, we don't actively patrol that area. Our responses to the southern part of the borough boundary of Dead Horse are done on an as-needed basis. If somebody calls us about a problem, we go down. Otherwise, we don't routinely patrol the road.
Okay, thank you.
Further questions, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Carr, if I could ask you, since off-road vehicles are not defined What do you anticipate four-wheel drive vehicles, trucks, and the likes are going to be going off the road when the ground is frozen, much like they do with the ice roads up around Nuiqsut and Atkinsut? How often do you see that happening, or how much do you anticipate it's going to happen on the Dalton Highway?
Mr. Senator, I would expect this if we don't clearly define what kind of vehicles we're talking about, to exclude pickup trucks and things like that, that you'll see a pretty dramatic increase in the use of those kinds of vehicles.
What kind of problem will that cause? Obviously, they're driving on the ice up in Atkinsut and Nuiqsut.
To the chair, Senator, often people who try to drive the ice roads find themselves stranded. The weather changes, there's no drift. We often respond to stranded vehicle situations in between Nuiqsut and Horse and other areas across the slope.
Okay, I guess my real question is, do you anticipate that it's going to harm the tundra at all?
Through the chair, Senator, I would expect the possibility exists depending upon the time of the year that the area was accessed. And I believe others would be better able to speak to tundra damage than I would.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Senator Cowdery.
Yes. On the tundra damage, for the do the subsistence hunters use off-road vehicles?
Through the chair, Senator, the subsistence hunters mainly use snow machines in the wintertime. And during the summer, for example, the people out of the Antietam Pass, they have specific travel corridors that they're allowed to use through the National Park Service and certain types of vehicles that are authorized. And that's all an attempt to mitigate any kind of damage to the land.
Additional questions? Senator Olson?
Chairman, maybe this is more a question to the sponsor. Do we have anyone from the Gateways of the Arctic Park Service to go ahead and testify on this bill as well, since it's going to be involving them?
No, Senator, I have not, but the Gateways of the Arctic, the National Park, have restrictions of their own that they feel are appropriate.
Further questions of Mr. Carr? Okay, seeing none, we'll go next. By the way, we want to limit people's testimony to 2 minutes. We've got several people to testify. Next, on off-net, Paul Hogan. Paul Hogan?
Good afternoon. Is that Paul? Did you go?
Oh, okay. Yeah, it could be. They've got Paul Hogan down here, but go ahead.
Okay, Senator, good afternoon from Antietam Pass. My name is Paul Hugo, and I am the North Slope Rural Assembly member for District 4, which represents the villages of Antietam Pass, Nuiqsut, Coctomic, and Death Horse. The public testimony given by our North Slope Borough Wildlife Director and North Slope Borough PSO Director and Dr. Brian Durson and others should be enough to let you folks know that the residents of the North Slope Borough is totally against this bill. And the intent of this bill would disrupt the residents of my district and the residents of the North Slope Borough as a whole. The 5 mile corridor was put in place during the time of the pipeline construction and was an ideal way for a commitment to protect our interests along the pipeline. At that time, it was called the Antietam Pass Corridor. I have been involved in many ways ensuring that the pipeline doesn't affect our residents. The bill would bring an ongoing disruption between the urban state residents and the rural residents. This bill would only benefit the residents out of the North Slope Borough. With the ongoing funds being received for home security. This bill would not benefit the state on getting future funding from the Homeland Security. The residents of the North Slope Borough have and is continuing the subsistence lifestyle near the corridor, and this bill would affect us in our yearly winter Burberry trapping. It would also disrupt the central Arctic bird scavengers and migrating herds during the spring and the fall season. My great grandfather and mother had spent many years along the Attican Pass, and my father and others had spent many summers along the Attican Pass and bring their own memories of these areas. Preservation and security is needed along the pipeline and must continue. Feel free to ask me any questions. Thank you very much.
Thanks for your testimony, Paul. Questions, Senator Lincoln.
One quick one. Paul, hello to you and to the Hugo family. I just have one quick question, and you heard the sponsor say earlier that the central Arctic caribou herd and the western Arctic caribou herd are plentiful, safe, not a problem. And I just heard you say for the central Arctic caribou herd anyway that you have some concern about that. What would be your response to the sponsor when he says the central Arctic caribou herd is it's in good hands?
Many years of hunting the central Arctic caribou herd up here and observing them through airplanes, I've seen those herds being disrupted not too far from the pipeline, and by the time they went into the Brooks Range, they were well over 9 miles west of Manitoubic by the time they finally went into the valleys of the Brooks Range. So disrupt our subsistence way of lifestyle on the caribou herds is very sensitive, especially during the month of August and September and October. If we weren't get hunting increase along the pipeline, I'm pretty sure they're going to move either east or west from the pipeline. So years of watching these herds after the pipeline was built, that herd decreased drastically. I mean, we weren't getting any herds from the east for a long time.
Thank you.
Paul, I got to ask you a question. You stated something about what caused that herd to decrease originally?
One thing was the pipeline being built. It took years for it to pick back up. Some season we're getting them from the northeast side of the valley here, from the pipeline direction. It took being involved in the Fish and Game Committee up here, it took me well over 10 years from the state just to get central Arctic caribou study. It took a long years and years just to get what was public information for us up here, and I finally got one of those studies about 2 years ago.
Oh, okay.
I remained confidential to the residents up here for a long time.
Further questions? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Paul, can you tell me where the Central Arctic has their calving grounds in relationship to the highway?
The North Slope Borough has a pretty good idea of where the calving ground is. I think it's southwest of Prudhoe Bay area, between south of Coupeau area. It's right in that area, and the last couple of years we've been watching the Bridge, which is west side of Alpine there in NPRA, not too far from Barrow. We've been really watching those herds, and every time those herds get to an industrial area, they don't want to move any further eastward as the industrial area traffic is so much that we're watching these herds, that satellite collar. So it's real sensitive. It's a real good way to watch how the caribous are reacting to these activities that's happening in those areas.
You talked about the Tushukpuk herd, Paul. We've heard about the central and the western Arctic. What's going on with the population of the Tushukpuk herd?
Tushukpuk herd, it varies. There's a whole bunch that also wanders there, right there in the NBRA. Certain years will get them to come through here. When they do that, they'll wander about 40 to 50 miles south of the village here, and when they winter there, that's a real ideal place for harvest and goats to hunt the caribous during the winter. But the central Arctic herd is something fairly new for the community here. They're finally starting to open up their studies to the residents here. One of the things we do during the spring season, probably starting this month, right on through May, we go over to the Inconnect Valley, which is about 10 miles west of the pipeline. We do a lot of ice fishing there, so we get a lot of traffic going through the foothills up there, going to that designation. And spring season is always pretty important for us for ice fishing in that area, if not for the fur-bearing animals up north on the foothills.
Last question, Mr. Chairman. Do you know where the calving area is for the porcupine herd?
Porcupine herd, I would leave that up to the North Slope Rural Wildlife, Charlie Brower, and his great George and his excellent staff that keep us informed up here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further questions? Okay, thank you for your testimony, Paul. Let's go to Fairbanks. Mike Bilby.
Yes, first of all, thank you, Mr. Seekins, for introducing this bill. My name is Mike Bilby. I spent about 12 years up along the Dalton Highway. I would like to start out by reading this 1942-10, just wrote one paragraph. Prohibition of off-road vehicles. Off-road vehicles are prohibited on land within 5 miles of the right-of-way of the highway. Highway definition is the haul road. However, this prohibition does not apply to off-road vehicles necessary for oil and gas exploration, development, production, or transportation, or to persons who hold mining claims in the vicinity of the highway who must use the land within 5 miles of the right-of-way to gain access to their mining claims. That is the law that's up there, and that is the law that's posted on the signs along the Dalton Highway. I would like to bring that to the attention of this group that the Dalton is 417 miles long, from mile 1 at Live and Good to mile 56 of the Yukon River is state land. At 56 miles is state land on both sides of the road. From mile 56 at the Yukon River to mile 302 to Slope Mountain. That is public land, managed by the Bureau of Land Management. Yes, that's right. The state has closed 246 miles of non-state land. But the first 56 miles of the Dalton Highway is state land, and the state does not seem to manage that at all. But there is only one significant trail in that area. If you'd like to go look at it, it's at Hess Creek. That's the only impact that I've seen up there from off-road vehicles in 56 miles. I'm confused. Why is the land closed to some people, yet not others? If one lives outside the corridor, they they can drive through it. If the people who live in Wiseman can operate snow machines there, but if we, the public, want to go use public land, we're told, no, it's closed. That is not a 10-mile strip of land. That is northern Alaska from the Yukon River north. Yes, one can start at the Yukon River, go 5 miles out, and then head north. But how much gas can you take to take a northern trip? No, you can't come into Colfax for fuel. Not only does this closure impact you and I, but what kind of businesses can it impact at Colfax or for winter recreation? Last year, there was 3 feet of good snow on public land in the Colfax area, and not in Fairbanks in the early part of the winter. Yet people had to drive down to Tailwell or Summit to recreate. This law has been looked at several times in the last 20 years. I did not see where there's never been a penalty written into this law. Why is that? They ask, is there no penalty, then why is this a big deal? Well, BLM has simulated the state ATV regulations nationwide. They do enforce state regulations under 43 Code of Federal Regulations, 8341. Would the public land be closed if the state was repealed?
Sir, would you sum it up? We're well over the 2 minute limit here.
We are.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry, I'll submit the rest of this in writing. I've heard that the public land is closed by the state law. I've heard there's security issues up there. The people can recreationally shoot up there as long as they're not hunting. I've heard that the chief of police say people don't belong on public land. I'm confused. I'm a public land user and I want to use this federal administered land. And thank you very much. I'll submit the rest of this in writing.
I appreciate that, and we'll probably have some questions for you here, Mr. Bilby. Any questions? No questions. Okay, yeah, if you'd submit that to the Capitol here, we'd appreciate it. Next, is Tara Sweeney back yet?
No, Tara's not back yet.
Okay, let's go to Rosemary at New Witsit.
This is Rosemary. I'm in Barrow at the current time. My name is Rosemary Domaroff. I live in Yorkshire, Alaska, outside of Prudhoe Bay. My family and I live a traditional lifestyle, relying on our traditional resources. We hunt birds, caribou, moose, muskox, and barrel wolves, wolverine, whale, and fish, and collect reeds and berries. We have chosen to try to raise our children as our elders have taught us to provide for our families from the land, sea, and air around us. We make our daily diets prepared for the seasons that have kept our cultures and traditions alive. We have grown in two worlds as parents, exposed to life in Fairbanks, Anchorage, and Seattle, and rural village life. The changes to us would be enormously negative with the opening of these areas along the Dalton Highway off-road vehicles. Our resources are migratory and transverse to these areas. The changes to their actions around this route jeopardize the successful reaching of to our areas and future generations of these resources. Opening into the area of off-road vehicles is like asking you to garden or shop in the mall with everyone but you using scooters to shop or garden. How do you feel trying to tend to your needs to assist activity occurring? Now, as these scooters along with the truck routes bringing your supplies to you, the increased interaction will cause delays to your supplies getting to you. Now, as gates that open only once a year to get these supplies to you, some would not make it. For us to not get our resources, we go without them. We have increased cost to Western goods due to the cost of shipping. We cannot pay a high cost to eat these foods at the level we traditionally eat our traditional foods. Our activities in these areas are to protect our resources to continue to sustain our families into the future. Our current job actions during the seasons are migration and hibernation to encourage the success of the reproduction. Our actions are based on generations and knowledge based on starvation, illness, and death. We teach our children as we have been taught. We are proactive to educating our future generations. Our strength of our education is based on our elders' losses and suffering. People coming to the area will not have the production and use of the area like we do. They would have to be educated as we were to prevent the negative interactions. We are working to ensure our resources return, and they are using the area differently than what is currently occurring. We are concerned about the lack of emergency services to the area. Right now, the service sites for the pipeline are the only area, and that is not planned to meet the demand that would be placed upon them. The concerns for the safety to the pipeline are very concerning to us. There's only one trooper on the route, and there is not adequate enforcement of the current regulations. These changes will need to change the federal management regulations for the assistance as a reaction to these actions. We have to react to this foreseen loss of resources if this passes. Our community has seen loss of resources due to activities that open the restricted use access for hunters. And we went without resources during these times. It is a very strong social impact that occurs to our community with the social ills increasing when we don't have traditional access to our resources. Those kind of borders we do not want to continue to see happen into our future. Thank you for the time to comment at this hearing.
Thank you, Rosemary. And will you submit your testimony? I think you do have it in writing. Is that correct?
Yes, I do. And there is a lot I wasn't able to add due to the limits placed upon our testimony.
Thank you very much. Other questions? Thank you for your testimony, Rosemary.
Thank you.
Next, let's go to T. HEPA.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Tepalik Heba, and I'm a lifelong resident of the North Slope, and I have been working for the North Slope Borough Department of Wildlife Management since 1991. One of my primary responsibilities has been to coordinate a project that documents the level of subsistence harvested animals and identify areas important to subsistence uses for each of the 8 North Slope communities. I'm opposed to Senate Bill 298, which repealed the ban of uses of off-road vehicles within 5 miles of the James Dalton Highway. I have a number of concerns that I would like to briefly bring to your attention. My first concerns are the impacts this bill will have on the subsistence uses in Game Management 26, in particular for the communities of Unobtuck Pass, Milkson, and to some degree Popdoweek. There is no doubt with the passing of this bill, there will be a dramatic increase in the number of people who use the Dalton Highway, either for hunting and or recreational uses, and will provide an opportunity for easy access to areas that are important to the residents of the North Slope for subsistence activities. There is bound to be an increase in conflict between sport hunters and local subsistence users. As an example, the competition between sport and subsistence hunters for resources such as caribou, Berberia moose, and muskox. One of my biggest concerns is that with the increase in hunting activity and motorized traffic to the west of the highway, this will have a devastating impact on the fall migration of caribou through Unobtuck Pass. The Nunavut have a lifestyle that is heavily dependent on the subsistence harvest of terrestrial mammals, with caribou being the single most important resource. Harvest numbers range between 311 caribou and 601 between 1995 to present. When the fall caribou migration is poured through Unobtuck Pass, this community is confronted with a serious problem. Other resources available, such as doll sheep, moose, and muskox, are so heavily regulated that this community, that their catch does not meet their nutritional need for fresh meat to last throughout the winter. I've also heard concerns from Milton residents about interactions with sport hunters or recreational users on the Coldwell. In one case, hunters from Milton were pursuing caribou where they were harassed by sport hunters in an aircraft scouting for bull caribou. The caribou were spooked and scouted before the hunters were able to harvest what they needed. This type of negative interaction is only going to increase with the passage of the bill. And how and who are the residents of the North Slope supposed to adequately express their concerns? There is only one state area biologist living on the North Slope who is stationed out of Barrow, and and the state's local fishing game advisory councils of the North Coast have been inactive since before 1990. We have initiated discussions to reactivate these two advisory councils. The response we have received is that it is very unlikely that the state's fourth session will reactivate them due to the state's current budget situation. We must all remember the original intent of the Hull Road. It was only supposed to be used for industrial purposes. The people of the North Oak were told at that time that this is how our resources and activities were going to be protected, by limiting it to industrial purposes. I recently heard the same type of comment made in a public meeting in Nelson last July about DOT's plan to extend the spine road into NPRA. It seems that promises are being broken again and on and on. At this time, I'd be glad to answer any questions you may have, and thank you for your time and listening to my comments. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Please have that submitted to us. Senator Lincoln. Ms. Heppett.
Ms. Heppett, this is Senator Lincoln, and I just want to ask you, if you could please, that you talked about the subsistence and that the harvest, that you're concerned about there not being enough of a harvest for the subsistence users. And looking back at the sponsor's statement that most of the hunters fly out, and there's plenty of caribou for people to use, including those that would be going up and using the off-road vehicles. Could you respond to that?
Yes, thank you, Senator Lincoln, for the good question. Sure, there are the populations of caribou herds on the North Slope are doing fine. I don't think Senator Zekins realizes the impacts of off-road vehicles will have on the resources. For example, people using snow machines from the Dalton Highway during the fall time and going west toward Anaktuba Pass will deflect the caribou from coming into the pass. I'm very concerned about that because traditionally the people of Anaktuba Pass allow the first groups of caribou to come through their pass before they harvest without any disturbance. And this ensures that the rest of the caribou herds to follow. And with people out there using snow machines and other types of transportation are going to divert the caribou from coming through the pass. Even though there may be a lot of caribou, there are going to be impacts, you know, for people to access the caribou or for the caribou to come in their normal route.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I appreciate those comments because as your neighboring Athabascans, we too feel that the first caribou herd that comes through has to pass safely. Otherwise, it could change the migration pattern. And so I appreciate that testimony.
Further questions? Thank you for your testimony. Next, we'll go to Bill Larry in Fairbanks.
Yes, sir. I'm representing the Snow Machine Club, Fairbanks Power Punchers, the Fairbanks Snow Travelers, and the Fairbanks Trailblazers. The Trailblazers also include ATV people. We're also with the Alaska State Snowmobile Association, and we're kind of back in this deal because we want to have snow go tours. We want families to go up there, recreate. We want photographers to take pictures and stuff like that. This is public land. We should all be able to enjoy the beauty of it. Before, I heard Mr. Peterson state that the ATVs were tearing up trails and stuff, and that the ground pressure on an ATV is very light. They have big fat tires, high flotation tires. They weigh very, very little, and they do not tear up terrain unless forced into a certain ha- snow machines don't tear up any of the terrain, or sure like to enjoy the powder. As far the last time, you also talked about the dull garbage disposals and stuff like that. There's outhouses and restrooms. There's over 11 of them between Yukon River and Galbraith Lake. And thank you for letting me see.
Questions of Mr. Larry? Senator Lincoln?
Mr. Larry, you've heard I think you could hear the testimony, the previous testimony, and I know that you spoke about going on tours with families and taking photographs, but and I think that's wonderful, and for families to get out and to do things like that. But does your snow machine clubs and ATV, I don't know if they're clubs, but ATV users, are they also hunters?
Well, I imagine a percentage, probably 1/20th would be hunters. But, you know, we enjoy, as you probably know, that the winters are so long, and it is good to get on a snow machine and enjoy this country, and that is beautiful country. And like the other gentleman said before, that they had snow last year, over 3 foot of it, and we didn't have anything here. There was nothing to ride a snow machine on.
If I could ask one more question. Mr. Larry, that's a long, I travel from Fairbanks to the bridge on a regular basis, and I know that's a long haul. How many, if that were opened up, percentage-wise, a good guess, what percent would actually use that of your snow machine clubs?
I would say close to 100%, and you know, there's other people that are joined on snow machine clubs, which we'd like them all to be, but you know, so we could kind of manage them and everything. But you're talking, also, you know, people want to take other people on tours from the, you know, the tourists from the States and Japanese and like that.
Excuse me, if you could, thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize for asking the questions, but I really don't know the answers to these, so I apologize, and I don't mean to be picking on you, Mr. Larry, but...
Oh, no, please, sir. Any questions?
Thank you. I haven't looked at it from the aspect of the tourism trade, but again, what would you envision if you took tourists up there? Because by the time you got up there and offloaded, especially in the winter, your daylight hours are very precious. Would you envision that there'd be overnighting somewhere along the way, or how would you envision it? This is a business you're talking about, right?
Right. Well, you have lodging and coal, but there's a lot of things that we put together. You know, you can have tents if you wanted to spend the night in the Arctic, have a tent. There's many options. It doesn't hurt to the snow machine in the dark. I love it. You know, sometimes it's more mysterious.
Thank you.
April, March, February, March, and April, we call it the Yellowstone. This is the best snow machine in anywhere. And you have such a long snow machine.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Larry.
Thank you.
Is Tara Sweeney back in Barrow yet?
No, I'm sorry, she's not here yet. Please call me back.
All right, let's go to Geoff Carroll.
Hello, yeah, this is Geoff Carroll. I've been in the area of Alaska Department of Fish and Game Biologist for the last 13 years in this area. And there's several, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. There are several reasons that repeal the statute that prohibits the use of ORVs on the Dalton Highway Corridor. I think it would be a very bad idea. one reason repealing the statute would throw wildlife regulations in Game Management Unit 26B into disarray. Nearly all the hunts and the unit are designed around the fact that there's limited access to hunters in the corridor. Some regulations would need to be rewritten and some hunts would be nearly impossible to conduct. For instance, we have registration hunts for musk oxen and sheep that I don't think we could use with the prospect of 15 or 20 hunters on snow machines lined up on the whole road on the opening day. Initially, subsistence hunters would be most negatively affected. If it's shown that the subsistence need cannot be made, we'd be forced into a Tier 2 situation, which would exclude hunters that don't have a history of hunting in the area. Second, there'd be an impact on wildlife. Just access of ORVs to the area in the winter will result in caribou and musk oxen being run during the time of year when they're not, when they're supposed to be sedentary. You know, just people want to take a closer look at the musk oxen. You know, they're going to run right up there on their snow machine. Another issue is the central Arctic herd has been used as a test herd for experiments on the impact of oil development on caribou. If the hunting pressure is suddenly changed, it will affect the results of ongoing and future studies. Enforcement demand and expenses for both traffic and wildlife issues will increase with more hunters spread over a larger area. There will be more need for wildlife enforcement. With more traffic and more accidents, there will be more need for road patrols and emergency services. Increased traffic, particularly people unloading ORVs along the road, will increase hazards for truckers. Pull-offs will need to be built or will create a very hazardous situation. All these things will be expensive and they don't make much sense at a time when the state can't seem to afford to provide enough funding for basic services like education. Another very important issue is honor. I think the state should honor the promises that made when decisions were being made as whether the whole road would be built or not. North Slope people were assured that the road would not be used to transport excessive numbers of people to their land. When the road was opened to the public, it was deemed necessary to protect wildlife resources by not allowing people to use ORVs to access the land surrounding the whole road. That need has not changed. This nation has a long but not very honorable history of making deals with local people, taking their land and resources, and then breaking the deal. However, I think that our state could do better than that and honor our promises to limit access to North Slope land, minimize the impact on the land, the wildlife, and the people of the North Slope by continuing the statute that prohibits use of RVs in the Dalton Highway corridor. I got more, but I'll cut off there.
Okay, you have that in writing? Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Olson. Senator Olson. Sorry.
Mr. Carroll, good afternoon. Checking to see if you have any documentation that dealt with some of the understandings, if not some of the written promises or promises that were given back in the 70s when there was a lot of Native input as to whether the road should be built and what kind of restrictions were to remain in place during this period of time.
I don't have that documentation at hand. That's something that probably could be researched and hopefully we can come up with. I don't have it right now.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
It's kind of a long, well-known understanding, I think, and like I say, kind of a matter of honor.
Thank you, Mr. Carroll.
Any further questions? Mr. Carroll, you didn't state at first that you're speaking for yourself.
Not yes, the department.
Yeah, thank you. Any further questions, Mr. Carroll? We appreciate your testimony, and please get the written testimony to us.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Next is Tom Burgess.
Okay, thank you. Senator Boundary, Chairman. My name is Tom Burgess, and I'm speaking for the Office of Homeland Security, State of Alaska. And what we would ask you to do is please consider maintaining prudent management of that corridor. We speak purely and simply from a view of the state's economic health and also for purposes of national defense. We feel that management of that corridor should reflect the threat level that is established by the governor and his anti-terrorism and disaster cabinet. And, sir, I stand by for questions if you have any from Homeland Security.
Thank you very much, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Burgess, you're speaking for Homeland, or speaking on behalf of Homeland Security. Are you indeed in favor of the bill or not in favor of the bill?
We are not in favor, or through the chair, Senator Olson, we are not in favor of a total lift of the restrictions on that corridor.
And could you be more specific as to the reasons?
Well, we think that it will create a marginal increase in vulnerability simply through access. It's hard to measure how much increased vulnerability would be there, but the mere increase of activity raises the opportunity for an incident to occur.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Lincoln.
Mr. Burgess, I didn't get your title.
Through the chair, Senator Lincoln, I am the Deputy Director for Homeland Security and Emergency Services, State of Alaska.
So I'm assuming that you are speaking on behalf of the director.
Yes.
Thank you. Could you explain a little bit further when you say that you're opposed to the total lift of restrictions? What does that mean?
Well, generally speaking, in terms of Homeland Security, you know, we have the levels, the threat levels from green, blue, orange, or red, orange, green, blue, orange, red, and so forth. And what we feel is that it's necessary to protect the pipeline in the state's interest, in the national interest, and some form of restriction could be in place during that, in that corridor, depending on the threat level, once it's been determined through intelligence processes.
Under the legislation as written, off-road vehicle, whatever that might mean, that can go within 5 miles of the right-of-way, or repealing that. Are your concerns from through that whole pipeline? From Prudhoe all the way to Valdez?
Through the chair, Senator Lincoln, yes, our concern is the whole pipeline, but the subject at hand is just from the Yukon River there to Dead Horse. And that pipeline, the more access there is to it, there's more opportunity for it to incur an injury from either an accident or an intentional act, such as the shooting some years ago.
One more. Mr. Burgess, what if this bill should pass? What would you have to do to maintain the security under Homeland Security?
Through the chair, to Senator Lincoln, that's a pretty long distance. I don't believe that we have the resources to protect the entire pipeline right now. In conditions orange and above, we generally post a checkpoint at the Yukon River Bridge in an attempt to screen the traffic going up and down that corridor. That's about all I think we can do at this stage with the amount of resources the state has available.
All right.
Do you have another question?
Well, along that same line, if I might.
Go ahead.
Are you anticipating that if you need additional resources to maintain the security, would you be coming to the state for those resources?
Through the chair, Senator Lincoln, we don't anticipate asking for any additional resources. Right now, we're accomplishing that mission between the National Guard, the Alaska State Troopers, and the ASDF. It's doubtful that the state could afford to significantly increase the amount of resources we have available to secure that particular zone from Yukon River to Dead Horse.
Thank you.
Senator Terrio.
Actually, Senator Lincoln asked my question. Thank you.
Oh, okay. Any Senator Seekins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What's the gentleman's name?
Tom Burgess.
Tom Burgess. Tom, this is Ralph Seekins. I have a question. When you set up these screenings at the bridge and someone drives through, if they had a snow machine trailer on the back of their truck, you'd screen that at the same time that you would their truck?
Through the chair to Senator Seekins. We have established checkpoint procedures when we set those up, such as there on the Dalton Highway, Yukon River Bridge. The procedures call for asking the occupant of the vehicle to volunteer to an inspection, and that is contingent upon passage further up the highway. I would say to you that they would look over the snow machine, and they might ask them to open a container or an enclosure on the snow machine, but I think that would be the extent of the inspection.
So there's no greater threat from a snow machine than there is from a pickup truck as long as you've inspected them both?
Yes, sir.
Another question that I have, of course, we all know that more than half the pipeline is below the river than above the river.
Yes, sir.
And that vehicle traffic, you've driven up the Hall Road, haven't you?
Yes, sir.
So 90% of the time the pipeline's in view of the Hall Road, and someone with a pickup truck could go drive right over underneath it without anybody stopping them. Isn't that correct?
That's correct, sir.
So why would, if someone were going to damage the pipeline, would they want to do it by getting out of their truck that they could drive right underneath the pipe and get on their snow machine in order to get underneath the pipe?
Well, we haven't viewed it exclusively as a snow machine issue. We would think it would be all forms of off-road vehicles.
But to get to the pipeline from the road, I mean, my wife drives a Lincoln Navigator, and she could do it in most of those places. It would seem to me that that road, that just the vehicular traffic up and down that road would constitute any kind of a threat, but being able to use an off-road vehicle to get to your trap line wouldn't be any greater threat than that. The number of people that are up there, if you have that checkpoint and you've screened them in order to go any farther, you've screened everything that they have in their possession. Am I right in assuming that?
Through the chair, Senator, yes, sir. During those periods when we set up the checkpoint, we screen the entire vehicle.
But you can't stop an airplane that flew from a private airplane field someplace north. Am I correct on that?
Through the chair, yes, sir.
Okay. I understand the need for security, and I'm not trying to be belligerent. I'm just saying it. You know, I guess if someone were to deliberately try to harm the pipeline north, they're probably not going to be somebody that's going up for an afternoon of snow machining somewhere up there is all what I was trying to get across. And I understand the need for security. I absolutely think that the folks that have done that have been doing a good job, so I appreciate that. I'm not trying to be belligerent or put you on the spot, sir. Thank you.
Any other questions? We're going to move right along. We got four more people. Hopefully, we can get most of their testimony, and if not, they have written testimony. Mike Tinker, Fairbanks.
Thank you, Senator. Good afternoon. I am Mike Tinker, and I'm the chairman of the Fairbanks Fish and Game Advisory Committee. And I guess in that role, my constituents are those terrible, nasty folks who would like to go hunt in the Hall Road Corridor. Before I move on to a couple other issues here, I will tell you that the Board of Game this morning raised the population objective for the Central Florida Caribou Herd to 32,000 animals and set the harvest objective at 2,000. The annual harvest over the last 5 years has been between 435 and 470 animals out of that herd, with some of those coming when they are in the far north of their range and over by New Exit, and the others coming from along the corridor taken under the present bull hunting regulations. Those are increases from the previous population objective was 20,000, and previous harvest objective around 1,000. Now, the point being here that caribou herd is in very good shape and has been recognized to be able to stand some additional harvest. The
central Arctic caribou herd by all of the testimony we heard this morning and expertise from the board does not mix a lot with the western Arctic herd, just a little bit. Does not mix much with the chinook buck herd, which is also used by the Nuiqsut folks. And so the fears of the Alaskans that who live in Anaktuvik Pass and those places, I think is a perceived more than an actual problem. It always bothers me what Alaskans don't want other Alaskans sharing our commonly owned resources. We are carrying people here in Fairbanks, and if we would like to come up and hunt caribou, we would operate in ways that are unlike most of the North Slope residents. And that is, if I were to go here caribou hunting, I would probably be interested in staying as close to the outside edge of that 5-mile corridor as I can, just from an efficiency standpoint. I mean, we wouldn't live there. We would be going there for a short period of time. We'd want a snow machine across that corridor, get outside where it was legal to harvest, and go back home. We really are not interested in going 75 miles off the corridor and then dropping down to Anaktuvik Pass or all the way up to the Nuiqsut or over toward Kanaktobik. It just wouldn't happen. That might happen under some organized expedition like that Mr. Larry talked about, where they would actually talk to a village and maybe go and visit or something like that, because there are snow machine tours set up in interior Alaska that do that. The one right now getting ready to head over toward Dawson, as a matter of fact.
Can I have you sum up?
I'm going to prepare my semi-written comments, Senator. I'd just like to say that the land managers, the BLM and the DNR, can easily handle the conditions under which off-road vehicles can be operated. Those are the practical, physical natures, and that's where I would like you to go with your decision-making process and try to stay away from all these perceived problems. And thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Tinker. Any questions, Mr. Tinker? No questions. Next, we'll go to George Ullman.
Sir, George Ullman has left.
Okay. How about Doreen Lampe?
Yes, he's here.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Doreen Lampe. For the record, I'm working with the Northern Rural Planning Department as a land officer. Before that, I worked with the planning department as a community planner and kind of over issues relating to the Dalton Highway. Back in 1999, the planning department issued a publication on the minimum adequate public facilities and services for the Dalton Highway coal footprint. A final report of standards and implementing responsibility for the North Slope Corridor on the Dalton Highway. I'd just like to read a couple of pages out of this. Under land use plans and regulations related to highway services and facilities, the borough has initiated borough-wide land use control to implement the comprehensive plan. The borough land management regulations contained in Title 19 of the Borough Code establish a transportation corridor zoning district for uses along the highway. The purpose of this district is to provide a strip of land to accommodate linear transportation facilities such as roads and pipelines. The transportation corridor district is to ensure that development complies with all board policies, including policies that apply specifically to transportation corridors. All of the officially designated development nodes are zoned by the borough. Most types of activities require borough permitting approval. Skip on to the municipal land entitlement. Alaska State Title 29 establishes the land entitlement for Alaskan municipalities. The North Slope Borough has an entitlement of 89,000 acres. In 1990, the borough selected state land as the designated nodes of Dead Horse, 1,678 acres, north of Happy Valley, 5,890 acres, and Franklin Bluffs area, 2,299 acres. In 1994, the Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities applied for an interagency land management agreement which is the transfer of land management authority at Happy Valley, the adjudication of board elections, and the ATOTPF request is still under review by ADNR. The ownership of the note will be important as the landowner will be the primary position to make decisions about which uses will occur and where they will locate. All of the node areas are large, most are over a square mile, but each one has a smaller key developed area, usually adjacent to the airstrip. Ownership of the heart of the nodes around land, around the air facilities, ground path, and along access points is important determining future uses and facilities. As you know, the state has only granted just a couple of land sections to the borough. One is the Oxbow landfill. Proto Bay was contaminated and used for disposing your trash, and the other one we fought very hard for was at Cross Island for subsistence use purposes. I don't understand why the state continually goes and supports everybody and encourages them to use all the land and is always against the North Slope Forest and does not even honor the North Slope Forest municipal land selection in over 30 years.
Is that all your testimony, Doreen? We're running short of time. Can you submit the rest of your testimony and that you read in writing to us?
How many copies of the pages I read, unless you want the whole document, I can...
No, just the pages you read in the record would be fine, thank you.
All right.
Okay, any questions? And seeing none, we got one more person to testify. Andrew Bowser in Fairbanks.
And I'll pass for right now.
Oh, okay. Is Tara Sweeney back yet? All right. Well, is there anyone else on either off nets or at the LIOs that wishes to be heard that hasn't been heard?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Yeah, my name is Matt Robes. I'm the Director of Wildlife Conservation. I'm available to answer any questions, but I don't have any testimony this afternoon.
Right. I've got you listed here for just answering questions. Is there any questions of Mr. Robes?
Mr. Robes, tell me your title again.
I'm the Director of the Division of Wildlife Conservation within the Department of Fish and Game.
Mr. Robes, I don't know if you can answer this question, but I was just asking, surely you must have a fiscal note. And I don't have any in front of me.
Through the Chair, Senator Lincoln, actually, we do not have a fiscal note prepared at this time. I was basically ready to talk more about the management tools that we in the Board of Game and the Board of Fisheries could also use in managing any additional assets that results through action on this bill, but I do not have a fiscal note to report to you at this time.
I might, Mr. Chairman, then I would like to ask, with opening up this vast area, how are you going to manage the fish and game?
Through the Chair, Senator Lincoln, it would depend, of course, on what the results were from any action taken to repeal this prohibition on ORVs and the extent to which any sort of pressure on wildlife or fish resources increased. Both boards have the power to take information provided by the department with regard to how harvest pressure is affecting populations and take actions that can range anywhere from restrictions on access under our authorities, such as what's in the 5 mile corridor either side of the road at present for the purpose of hunting, to much milder types of tools, such as changing bag limits or changing season dates or that type of thing, where we could make sure that the affordable amount of harvest would not be exceeded so that those populations would continue to do well.
Further questions? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Were you finished, Senator Lincoln? If I could, Mr. Robles, you're saying you do not have a plan in place. Should this repeal of the statute go forward?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, we have seasons and bank limits already in place, and the fisheries divisions do too. And so what would happen is through reporting of harvest and monitoring by our staff, we would report to the boards with any recommendations for changes in regulations should we think they need be needed. And similarly, advisory committees and members of the public have the same opportunity to put recommendations in front of the boards of game and fisheries. If they feel that some adjustments need to be made based on their observations. So there is no plan per se, but there's certainly a mechanism on both the wildlife and the fishery side to deal with any management issues that might come up as a result of this.
Senator Seeker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Robles. In other words, what you're saying is you'd use the same process you already use on other public lands and are already doing on these lands now. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Seekins, that is correct. And a process I neglected to mention is that the department has emergency order authority in case closures would be necessary on the way to going to a board process. So there's that authority as well.
Senator Lincoln.
Mr. Robles, I'm a little confused here. You're saying that, you know, you already have in place seasons and bag limits, and we heard from the sponsor that, you know, to get into those areas now you have to fly in or walk in. And now we're saying for this tremendous area of Alaska that we're going to open it up, for off-road vehicles. I mean, it's absolutely repealing that the whole act that we had in place for a 5-mile limit and off-road. And when you say observation, I'm still puzzled that and I guess finance is going to have to take it up, but I'm still puzzled that you're telling me that your department is going to observe what's going on here and then take action. How are you going to do that with the personnel that you've got on hand right now?
Through the chair, perhaps my wording was a bit misleading, Senator Lincoln, and I apologize. Throughout the state, most of our observing of hunting seasons and estimation of harvest pressure and so forth is not through direct observation. It's often through indirect things like reporting on harvest tickets and on permits and so forth, so that we build a picture of how harvest pressure is changing and how modes of access are changing, at the same time that our biologists are responsible for keeping track of how different wildlife populations are doing. And based on those two sets of data, we come up with the best recommendation we can for the Board of Game to look at regulation changes changing situations. So I didn't mean that we would be out there orbiting overhead the whole time, but we would, in a fairly short time, follow up on changes in how hunts are conducted and how many people are accessing particular populations.
How are you, my question though was, how are you going to do that with the existing staff?
through the chair, much of our operation now is based on making priorities. There's far more to do in terms of management research than our staff can undertake in any given year. And we would have to kind of move the chess pieces around on the board to deal with changes of this sort that are put into place.
Do you anticipate, through the chair, do you anticipate you're going to have to move chess pieces around?
Metaphorically speaking, we possibly, probably would have to do some of that. I imagine that the area biologist responsible for game management units that the haul road goes through would have to pay closer attention to access off of the haul road, if for no other reason, just to try to detect if there's substantial differences as a result of the change in the law.
One, if I could just,
Senator,
real quickly.
We need to be careful and stay on point. We start to sound like a philosophy class here.
Well, you might call me out of order on this next question, then,
okay.
Mr. Chair, and you certainly can if you'd like. But Mr. Robus, you heard testimony earlier, maybe you heard it, I don't know, that people could change the migration pattern of the caribou herd by perhaps